Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Van Weven. Alongside me, as always, are my co-host, Mr. Chad Deep Sea Riley.
Splish Splash.
And Spencer Williams.
Oh, I don't get a fancy title. That's fine. What's up?
How you guys doing?
Well, you know, we saw this movie, so we've got a lot to talk about.
That's true.
I don't know that I agree. I have a little to talk about.
That's right. We're going to be talking about the upcoming film debuting this week, The Meg. So stick around as we kind of joke and talk and have some fun with this one. But before we do, Chad, why don't you give him a little bit of that information?
Sure, I'd love to. From below 10,000 meters under the ocean surface, The Filmlosophers is brought to you by the unsinkable Mingle Media TV and the wishy-washy VGB Studios.
Wow.
Yeah, they're not wishy-washy. They're good people.
They're good peoples.
Looking to fund an expedition into international waters? We'll take your money. Subscribe to The Filmlosophers on your... We won't go to international waters.
No, we're
we'll
not
just
going.
Take your money.
I don't want to be robbed by pirates.
Good point. That's a good point.
You
I don't
guys.
Want to be robbed by pirates either. We'll stick to the land. You can subscribe to The Filmlosophers on your favorite streaming platforms and gain access to new episodes each Wednesday on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, and Audio Boom. We do have a slight disclaimer just as a service for, I don't know, one or two of you. We typically post episodes first thing in the morning on Wednesday, like at the stroke of midnight. But sometimes we deal with embargoes, which happened last week with Christopher Robin and happened this week with The Meg. Those embargoes force us to delay posting a given episode until later that day or the following day. So, for anyone who's waiting up late to get the latest and greatest at midnight, but you get disappointed when we don't show up on time, we're so sorry. It's really out of our hands.
If, on the other hand, you feel like you've waited too long and kind of missed the boat on an episode, don't worry. Hey, no sound effects. We're happy to get you up to speed on social media any day of the week. Like our page on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. Last but not least, our content archive may not be prehistoric, but it's pretty nice. Visit our website at filmlosophers.com to take a bite out of more than 100 episodes.
Spencer, you're getting better at that.
Chomp, chomp.
I like that. You're doing well. Give you props.
Hey, you know,
on the episode.
It's been 8 months and I'm learning something.
Was that a compliment fest? That was amazing. You two were so was so healthy.
No, well, that's because we're about to.
For the next 4 years.
It's true. It was just a magical moment.
Well, I liked it while it happened.
Don't you dare.
Speaking of magical, let's go ahead and jump right into this film review, shall we? We got a chance to check out The Meg, which is one of this summer's blockbuster films, and what's coming out in the summertime?
Summer film.
True.
We'll see if it's a blockbuster. Maybe Jason Statham has some star power.
True. And I think that's kind of what's going to carry the majority of this film. But as we said, we got a chance to check this film out. And we're going to kind of dive deep, no pun intended, into a little bit of what this film may or may not offer you if you're a fan.
We have so many puns, and we do intend them. We have to keep ourselves occupied somehow.
So, Chad, why don't you give him a little bit of that official synopsis goodness to go along with this sound.
I'll do my best. A deep-sea submersible, part of an international undersea observation program, has been attacked by a massive creature previously thought to be extinct and now lies disabled at the bottom of the deepest trench in the Pacific, with its crew trapped inside. With time running out, expert deep-sea rescue diver Jonas Taylor is recruited by a visionary Chinese oceanographer against the wishes of his daughter to save the crew and the ocean itself from this unstoppable threat, a prehistoric 75-foot-long shark known as the Megalodon.
Yep.
What no one could have imagined is that years before, Taylor had actually encountered this same terrifying creature, Now, teamed up with this scientific team, he must confront his fears and risk his own life to save everyone trapped below, bringing him face to face once more with the greatest and largest predator of all time.
Mankind. No, I'm just kidding.
Wow.
directed by...
That went deep.
It did. Directed by John Turtletop. Turtletop. The film stars Jason Statham, Lee Bingbing, Rainn Wilson, otherwise known as Dwight Schrute, Ruby Rose, Winston Chow, and Cliff Curtis. The Meg is based on the book Meg, a novel of deep terror, and is the first book that author Stephen Alton ever published. One thing that a lot of people don't really know is that there's actually a slew of these books. So aside from just the one that he did, he actually has, I believe, four out? No. I think he has like about six books out currently, and there's another one actually supposed to debut either this year or next year.
Here's my thing. The books are fine. The way that you see like Asylum films on Sci-Fi Channel,
mm-hmm.
or some of the goofier parts of Shark Week, I can see the appeal of these books. I don't know that it needed to be made into a major motion picture.
No, I really feel like this would have been better as like a sci-fi like original movie, because then they wouldn't have had the budget to do this well, and it would have been like fantastically bad.
Which would have been incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, you almost want that lower sounds, budget that, for stuff like this.
That sounds counterintuitive. Like, if you're wanting a lower budgeted film on a film that just could use... I mean, how many times do you actually see some of these B-movies get that kind of love? For like, hey, you know what? Let's go ahead and throw them a bone and actually give them some money to make some kind of decent CGI effects in this one.
Did you see how much the potential budget for this movie was?
No. What was it?
It was $150 million.
Well, there you go.
Versus like $3 million usually for an Asylum film, probably.
Yeah.
That's a guess. I haven't tabulated.
I mean...
I don't know their accounting team or anything.
They're not high rolling in the dollars.
No, they're not. They don't need to. You don't need to. You don't need to.
I don't know. I think this was... So, kind of circling around, no pun intended... around this film.
We're going to...
We might as well just get rid of that disclaimer. Because
yeah, don't even...
I don't know. Like, so I started reading the books about... what was it? A few weeks ago. Maybe about a month ago. I started reading the first book. And the first book was really great. Like, it was just as ridiculous as the movie. Obviously, you can't have two pieces of you know, inspiration, one being the source material and one actually being the inspiration, whatever. Obviously, they're not always going to be the same. We've seen it time and time before with adaptations of novels, trying to make films out of comic books, out of whatever source they pull from. And it doesn't always pan out. It doesn't always, like, directly mimic exactly what's in the source material. And this is one of those instances where the book was vastly different than the movie. But I think much like Ready Player One, which I was a huge fan of, both the book and the film, mm-hmm. I think this film did pretty decent for what it was offered and what it had to work with. And yeah, I mean, I'm not saying this film deserves any Oscars or anything, but I enjoyed my time watching this film.
Now, do you think that's because you read one or more of the books before going to see it?
I think that affect, like, my enjoyment of the film may have been affected by me actually knowing a little bit of, like, the content of what I may or may not see. That's kind of like...
Well, that was so non-committal. May or may not have affected what I may or may not have seen. Come on now.
So, I liked...
Pick a position, Eddie.
I liked the book, and I was hoping that the film honestly didn't do everything the book was going to do, because the book really kind of goes into like his marital issues and his whole issue, you know, him being tracked down by this crazy reporter who's trying to ruin him, and it kind of gets a little all over the place. And in this one, and I was hoping that this film was going to kind of break it down to just the necessity of what the book was trying to come across, which was, you know, there is a giant megalodon that is...
Which was an actual creature.
Which was an actual creature.
I mean, that deserves to be stated.
Yes, the Megalodon, what is it, Carcharian Megalodon? I believe that's the original, that's the actual name. Either way, the shark...
The eyes glaze over.
The prehistoric shark actually was one that lived at one point in time.
Yeah, it was
huge. They were ginormous.
But they were not as big as the one in this movie.
How do you know?
Because I've seen one in a museum. It's all like the its teeth and mouth. Like, it's not that big.
Spencer does his research. This is why we hired him. This is why we pay him the big bucks, because he actually cares and he researches things. You read things, and I just sit here and talk.
It's true. But, and I guess this kind of goes into like our expectations for what we were hoping with this particular film. I think one of my biggest expectations was the fact that I didn't want this film, in all honesty, to be remotely close to, like, I didn't want it to be exactly as the book. I wanted it to be unique. I wanted it to be obviously updated because the original book debuted in 1997. And so there's a lot of dated parts of that book that you can clearly tell the book was written during the 90s, maybe even part of it during the late 80s. So technology and everything that the book kind of leans on is
needed to be updated.
Exactly. So there's a lot in terms of the book that I was hoping they were going to do without, and they were going to kind of do their own thing, but still keeping with the heart of it. Obviously, an individual who was a part of this naval team who was doing a research expedition, whose research expedition ends up getting hit by this giant creature. He tells everybody, nobody believes him, and 5 years later, he now is the only person who can actually help save everybody because he knows what he's doing. He knows what it was that had hit his sub. And I think that was the heart of it all in the book. And I think going into this film, that was my biggest expectation. You know, just hoping that it was going to not be so close to the book and they were going to have fun with it.
Which story did you like better, the book or the movie?
I like the movie. Mm-hmm. The book, like I said, got a little too into the weeds with his relationships. We'll talk about it in a little bit more detail, but in the film, his wife is actually part of the research team, whereas in the book, his wife was this reporter who becomes famous and is having an affair with her production guy who's always there all the time, and is scheming with this other reporter to take down her husband so that he could ruin him. And once he's ruined, she would give the reporter this full scope exclusive interview about what had actually happened when her husband went down to the Mariana Trench and that whole event happened. Because it's a classified event that occurred, and so nobody knows, and everybody just knows that he was discharged from the military and whatnot. So it's really weird, and although she does get eaten in the book, like, hardcore, which is great, like, she's in a helicopter, and the helicopter comes and eats her.
The shark... The helicopter doesn't come in.
Oh, I'm sorry. Eat her. The shark.
I mean,
eats.
I'm not gonna.
What happens. You know, it's a book. Anything can happen. But yeah, I like the film better. What about you guys, Spence? What did you expect going into this film?
So with movies that are not what I would consider to be, you know, the mainstream, like your Avengers movie or even your like Christopher Robin movie, like this should be like a fun, like, action-ish type movie. I was kind of nervous because it really needs to be done correctly, and it's very easy for these types of movies to go off the rails, like either getting too deep into the weeds of source material. Like, I could easily see them being like, we have to put in all this like side plot about like the wife and the reporter that has to be right in there.
Yeah.
When you don't get like the right people who understand, like, no, we have to cut all this extra stuff out and just focus on like the shark and stuff. That can be a bit of a point. So I was a bit nervous because wasn't sure how they were going to handle it. And then it came out a little bit better than I thought it would, but it didn't quite reach that high for me of, like, you know, an awesome, like, B-type movie that had a lot of money to work with.
I'll go next. I went into this movie with a very, very simple expectation. I wanted it to look, like, definitively realistic.
Okay.
Like, it earned the fact that it had a blockbuster budget of reportedly $150 million. I wanted it to have graphics that were better than an Asylum film on Sci-Fi Channel, and performances that were a little more authentic, realistic, and believable than what you typically find. And I love Asylum films. Don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
We're all fans of that whole mess. We watch them regularly and enjoy them for what they are. But if you're going to spend $150 million on a film just like those, then it should be definably better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my expectation going in.
And I can see that, and I kind of want to kind of reel back a bit. Spence, being the B-movie aficionado here on this episode, actually on this podcast, if there's anybody who is more familiar with B-movies and just bad movies in general, because apparently this man enjoys seeing the worst of the worst in cinema, how did this fit in terms of, like, the expectations, seeing the trailers and whatnot, how did this fit in terms of how you would have compared it to, like, say, something like a Sharknado? Or is this because of, like, what Chad was saying with the actors that were in it and the way the trailer made it seem, did you think there was a chance that this film would actually be, like, a serious or a even, like, taken seriously type of film?
Oh,
or were you fully expecting it to be just a B-movie?
I was a bit worried that they were going to go the serious route. Because, again, that's another route you don't want to go. Because you could make this movie work with the actors you have and with good CGI. You just need to, like, this is personal preference for me. I would prefer to see slightly worse acting. Because usually when you get, like, some hokey acting in with, like, a lot of logical jumps that don't quite make any sense, then you start to get, like, a stew of something really entertaining. Like, that's the kind of stuff I look for. And this one, they tried to tie things back to reality in a way that, you know, makes enough sense that no one's going to really question too much of it. Besides, you know, would a shark eat a boat even if it could? I don't really think so, but that's really the only nitpick on that I have.
Would a shark eat a boat even if it could? Sounds like a children's story.
Well, I mean, because it's still not edible. Like, it's just wood.
It's wood.
Do sharks eat wood? That doesn't seem like a thing that's real.
I feel like they would eat anything.
Okay, but is that because you've been watching a whole bunch of movies where they're just going chomp, chomp, chomp?
I mean, from what I understand, they're the goats of the sea. So, I mean, like, goats eat just about anything, so sharks eat about anything.
The goats of the sea.
Yeah, man. Get with it.
No, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize. I know that sharks have to go to the sea. That's new to me.
Well, there you go. And obviously, like we said, this film doesn't debut until this upcoming Friday. So with films that come out later, and we kind of wanted to take a second to mention this, with films that come out later in the week where we get an early chance to see it, sometimes there's something called an embargo date. And an embargo, we just wanted to kind of mention this a little bit. An embargo date is the date that the studios will allow us to begin talking about the films. And as Chad mentioned earlier, we did have a little bit of a snafu with the last episode where it didn't debut until Thursday. No. Yeah, Thursday.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a snafu. It's just protocol.
Just protocol, following what the studios say. But
I mean, it's Disney, so you kind of have to play by their rules or else they'll revoke your pass.
True, and it's similar with this one, and the studios don't want us to actually post the review until later in the evening on Wednesday, which we try to record these as early as possible. But like we said, we wanted to kind of just give that brief explanation just so when people actually check out the episode or when they're wondering why the episode debuts later, for people who follow us a little bit more closely, like our family and whatnot.
So all two of you.
Yeah.
Sorry, we're a few hours later than expected. Yeah, so it's Same day. I think we're all good.
Coolio. Well, jumping right into the film, obviously we're introduced to Jonas Taylor, we're introduced to a whole slew of individuals. From the very top, you got people like, I keep forgetting his name. I just know him as Dwight Schrute, but Rainn Wilson, who plays this multi-billionaire?
Yeah, it was very ambiguous. I mean, the first scene actually is the flashback scene. The first scene is when you see Jonas's first encounter with something that is strong enough to collapse the hull of a submarine way down deep in the ocean, and he's rescuing people. He's not successful in rescuing everybody, and that has a psychological impact on him that then he carries through the time jump, because right after that scene, you flash forward 5 years to the present day, and then, yeah, you meet Dwight K. Schrute, multi-billionaire. But it's handled in a very blasé manner. If you don't know it going in, you're kind of like, wait a minute, who's this guy? Why are we following him? And, oh, apparently he has a lot of money. And it was kind of sloppy, to be honest, the way that he was introduced.
Yeah.
From a characterization standpoint, like his personality and how he's portraying the character, that's all fine. But what his exact role is and how he matters to the rest of the characters was kind of really poorly handled, in my opinion.
True. And I think
you mentioned that he doesn't have an analog in the book.
No.
So he kind of just was this rogue element.
No, in the book, so Jonas is actually brought in by this institute in Monterey for, I guess, the Monterey Bay Aquarium. Mr. Tanaka is the financier of this facility, and he has just opened this huge whale. It's almost like a pool for these whales. And he brings in Jonas because one of his submersibles gets stuck. So he's the financier. He's the rich man, if you will, bringing in somebody to take care of his
issue. And apparently the people behind this movie got really anxious when they saw Finding Dory and how much that was set at the Monterey Bay Aquarium, because that doesn't have anything to do with this movie. There are zero elements of that entire plot in this movie.
Exactly. This film, I don't even know.
Also, it was funded from, I don't remember the name of the group, but there's a Chinese production company that put a lot of money into this movie. So the entire, like, the locale is different. It's not the Mariana Trench. It's somewhere in the Philippines, and it's even deeper potentially than the Mariana Trench. And so, like, there was a lot locationally that was changed, probably to accommodate where the money was coming from, which makes sense.
The movie was financed by Flagship Entertainment and Gravity Pictures. That's the Chinese group.
Yeah.
Which one?
Gravity Pictures.
Gravity Pictures. Gravity Pictures. And so, yeah, it's an interesting dynamic to make that change, because I don't know if they wanted to have more of the American financier aspect. Like, I don't see what the point was. I would have been just as fine with the older, because in the book it's an older Asian man who has worked with Jonas for years prior to, so they have a relationship. So him bringing him to his facility is more of a show of goodwill to his friend. Jonas doing that is a show of goodwill to his friend, as opposed to here, he's brought in under other pretenses.
Sure. Well, and a lot of things are, I mean, obviously Tanaka is a Japanese name, and Gravity Pictures is a Chinese company, so the not to be blanket statement, but the Asian the characters from an Asian background are Chinese. They speak Chinese. They, you know, there are subtitles on the screen. So yeah, obviously there are some things that were changed to suit the actual backers of the film project.
Yeah,
and like you said, there were some technological subplot elements that needed to be updated anyway.
Yeah. We're also introduced to Bing Bing Li, who plays Su Yin, the daughter of Zhang, who's played by Winston Chow. Zhang is actually the, I guess, manager of the facility for Rainn Wilson's character. And Su Yin is his daughter and also one of the head researchers on site at the facility. She's got a little girl. Her name is Mei Ying. Then you're introduced to the rest of the crew, who happen to be you have Jax, who's played by Ruby Rose, DJ, played by Paige Kennedy. You have the doctor, Dr. Heller. There's a whole slew of individuals, and one of them also happens to be Jonas Taylor's ex-wife. Her name was, it escapes me. Was it Lori?
She's not all that important to the
story.
She
really isn't.
It's the submersible pilot is his ex-wife.
Yeah.
So that's basically all you need to know.
So essentially, the whole plot at the beginning of this film is they're going to go past the depths of what we have known as the bottom of the Mariana Trench, because they feel like the bottom of the Mariana Trench is actually this thick layer of permacling, I believe it's called, or it's like this slush of ice and water and whatnot that just keeps a separate ecosystem beneath the surface. So they plan to just burst through that and find the life that is underneath there, which they do. And yeah, essentially that kind of kicks off.
Yeah, they're testing the theory that it's not that is actually not the bottom of the ocean surface, that that's some kind of in between barrier level. And if they essentially push hard enough against it, they'll break through to the other side. Similar to like when you've got your saltwater and freshwater. What are they called? Like off the coast of Central America, where like you literally kind of break through a barrier, but it's all water. It's just what's salty and what's not.
Oh yeah.
They're really cool to look at. I don't remember the name of them off the top of my head, but anyway, basically they think that, that's going to happen here, and they're testing their hypothesis.
So essentially this movie would be super short if they realize that their hypothesis were wrong and they end up hitting the bottom. So they end up going through this thing and they end up finding all these creatures, including this ginormous megalodon, to which he attacks their submersible and leaves them unable to get back to the surface, wherein they bring in Jonas Taylor. And it kind of kicks off from there. I mean, all the action sequences occur from that point moving forward. Jonas Taylor is this individual who's just living like this rogue life in the middle of Thailand, drinking beer, being drunk, working on fishing boats, and, you know, randomly riding his motorcycle through this town.
Well, because everybody wrote him off as crazy when he said, you know, I didn't abandon these people that didn't make it. We were being attacked. The submarine didn't just explode on its own underwater. Mm-hmm. It was provoked to do so, and at least I saved the ones that I got off, you know. So, and everybody discredited him because since the submarine exploded, there's no evidence of what he claimed, which was that there was a giant sea monster.
Well, that's a really weird thing to do, because like even in our society, we know that there's tons of stuff in the ocean that we don't know any like what's down there.
But dinosaur Spencer, dinosaurs.
He didn't know it was a dinosaur.
Dinosaur
he just said
Spencer.
It was a very large sea creature, which
dinosaurs.
There could be very large sea creatures.
Giant squid,
Loch Ness.
Yeah, see, giant squid. That's a real thing. Yeah, Loch Ness monsters just getting into the middle of the ocean.
You never know. This is actually another point of difference between the book and the film, because in the book, Jonas Taylor is actually giving a lecture at one of the local schools, and so he's a wool jacket wearing individual, wears glasses. He's
so
older.
Not Jason Statham.
Not
completely not Jason
movie.
Statham. And this was one of the points that I was like, oh my gosh, they better not try to put Jason Statham in like one of those wool professor jackets and try to have him give a lecture on.
Hey, they did it with Harrison Ford numerous times as Indiana Jones, so it could happen.
They should have done that with Jason Statham. That would have been amazing.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
You think so?
Because that's insane. Why would you ever do that? This is the time. Giant shark movie? Yeah, let's put Jason Statham in like some patches.
College professor.
And much like the other difference is that instead of the drawing of him going to the facility being his wife being trapped in this submersible down below, it's actually his Tanaka's daughter who comes, meets with him and implores upon him that her father really wants to see him to get his advice on this down submersible that he has, that it doesn't have anybody in it. It's just a very expensive piece of equipment. And
In the book.
And Tanaka doesn't want to lose that. So, like I said, Jonas goes as a favor to his friend, whereas in this one, it's kind of a life or death situation.
Which is far more interesting for a movie-going audience. So
very true.
Good change.
Yeah, most definitely.
Also, you've got Hiro from Heroes on this submersible, Masioka. So, I mean, loved seeing him again.
And then, of course, like I said, once you get into that part of the film just kind of takes off. Like, everything that you expect bad to happen happens in this movie. We're not going to get into spoilers, because as we said, the film doesn't debut until this upcoming weekend. But needless to say, this is a shark movie, so you can expect shark things to happen. Now, on a scale of from Jaws being the most normal type of thing to happen in a shark film to Sharknado being the most ridiculous thing to happen in a, you know, it lies somewhere between Deep Blue Sea and Jaws 3, maybe. I mean, this, because it doesn't necessarily, like, scale all the way to ridiculousness.
No.
In terms of, like, how they approach them trying to defeat the shark, but it's still, like, ridiculous. Like, you see this shark, and it is massive. It is huge. It dwarfs, like, whales that it sees, like, swimming by. So it's pretty impressive, and I would probably be worried sick if I saw something like that in the ocean.
Why? You're not going into the ocean.
No, I'm saying if I was in the ocean and I saw something like that, I would probably, like, freeze in fear. Like,
well, that would be the thing to do, because it's a
freeze in
sound.
Fear, so that way you just sink to the bottom.
Well, float, obviously. If you're just floating there, it's not gonna find you. The movie clearly said that.
Oh man,
yeah, it definitely does suffer from the T-Rex in Jurassic Park syndrome. If you don't move, it won't see you.
Oh, that was,
it does something similar to that. Can I just, like, insert though?
Sure.
Just to be a contrarian. I didn't find this shark believable in the least. I was not impressed with the graphics. It looked like Asylum graphics to me, honestly. Like, maybe slightly more expensive, but no more believable. There are a lot of shots where, in order to try to illustrate the scale, they're just doing, like, a quick, massive swim by, and you don't actually see the whole thing. You see parts of it that could be a whale, a great white, like... There were a lot of decisions, visual decisions that they made with regard to the creature or creatures. There may be more than one. There are. I'm just going to tell you that. Spoiler alert. So the creatures in this film, very few times do you glimpse the entire thing. And I think that they meant to do that as, like, a thriller aspect, right? Like, you can't see the whole form of the thing that you're so scared of. However, I didn't really find it that frightening. And when you did see it, it didn't, like, the color didn't match the ocean around it. Like, there was something that was off about the digital artistry of placing the creature in its environment. You know, that's like the rest of it is kind of like almost like a blue green wash, and then this thing is almost like it's gray, but it's sort of got like a brown overlay. And it just doesn't match the environment very well sometimes. It was distracting to me. It's not
really,
like, you know, 1970s graphics bad. It's not like claymation bad, like Clash of the Titans.
It was pixelating well on the screen.
But it just didn't integrate at all to me. It didn't feel like it integrated very well with its environment. There were a couple of times when it did. There's like some low lighting. There's a sequence with a very interesting transparent shark cage in like dark water where the only light is coming from the cage itself.
Mm-hmm.
And it played better in that sequence because you could only see the parts that you needed to see, which were the giant teeth in its giant mouth. And the rest of it was mostly in darkness, but you could kind of see the figure of its entire shape. But I mean, in general, I watch Shark Week, Sharknado, you know, Mega Shark versus...
Oh, I forgot about those movies.
Colossus?
Pterodactyl or whatever.
Oh,
Rhinodactyl or... You know, all these ridiculous mashups.
Was there really one of those?
No,
that
there was like a...
That would be amazing.
Hold on, I gotta see
No, it was like a pterodactyl and a something else. I don't remember. But like a crocodile maybe, I don't know. Asylum does all kinds of weird things. Sci-fi... They're not all Asylum films. Sci-fi does all kinds of weird things. But in this film... I mean, you've got like humpback whales. You do have other sharks, great whites, hammerheads, some smaller ones. There are other marine life creatures that are in a few of the scenes in this film. And they were more believable to me, even though they were all CGI also, but they looked better integrated with the environment than the Meg itself. For some reason to me, the Meg just did not go with the rest of the visual canvas most of the time. And that was, to me, that was very distracting. It, to me, seemed kind of lazy. So I don't know if it's because they spent a lot of time working on the rendering of the Meg and trying to make it move believably or be the right size or whatever. And so they didn't have a lot of time to composite it with the environment. But yeah. Here's what it was like to me. I know I'm talking way too long about this. If you have one of those old school like sticker books and you had like, here's the underwater scene, put the stickers of the fish and the merman and the mermaid and the seashells and whatever, and you stick the stickers onto the background. That's what the Meg felt like to me in its environment most of the time.
Really?
It felt kind of like pasted on, but not integrated.
That's interesting. I don't know. So the coloring, I just attributed to the fact that it was beneath that layer of ice and whatnot, and so it just, the skin color was off because it was used to the darkness beneath. In my mind, that was the first thing that I had attributed, because I did notice the coloring being a little weird, but I just, in the back of my mind, I pushed it to that. But I mean, I have to say, like, the close-ups of like the gills and the way it looks and the way like the movement of it, I thought that was pretty natural. Like, maybe I could see the coloring being an issue, like, completely, for somebody who may not have been in that mindset. Like I said, I was kind of really rooting for the film and hoping that it would work out. Either way, but the close-up shots of like the shark and like when the gills are opening and moving and when his body is turning and his muscles are flexing, it's pretty cool. I thought it was pretty realistic.
I did like the close-ups of the shark. I did think they did a really good job on that
part. Yes!
But
what? No.
Yeah. No, but Chad does have a point.
You're welcome to disagree with me. I mean, I was not impressed, but that doesn't mean that you have to not be impressed.
I can see both sides of what you're saying.
Also, yeah. It was always a her. They referred to both of them as hers.
Yeah, that was interesting to me. I'm like, how do you know she's a her?
I thought it was like a boat thing. Like, you know how ships always have...
Ah, they're ship knows.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Well, I know from Shark Week specials that you can, if you know sharks, you can easily tell males from females because of the shape of their fins. Oh. So they never take the time to explain any of this in the movie, nor do I think that they need to, but it's possible that these creatures were designed to be female, and for anybody who knows shark anatomy, you would see quickly that they're female. But the scientist characters do refer to both of them as hers.
Yes.
The allegedly two. I don't want to give away too much. There are two of them in this movie, and they're both referred to as female.
Great. Good job. No. Yeah. One of the things, and so I've been mentioning that there's a lot from the book that I was really hoping they weren't going to do in this particular film. However, there is a but, and it's a big but.
It's a megalodon but.
It's a megalodon but.
Mm.
The opening chapter to this book, I would have given anything to have seen that opening chapter done in this film, or even just created. So the opening chapter, and you would actually get a kick out of this, Chad. The opening chapter has, I forget what they're called, those duck-billed dinosaurs?
Hadrosaurs.
Okay, so it paints a picture for you where these two hadrosaurs are eating like vegetation on the edge of this vast water, wherever this is, and then all of a sudden, they begin to freak out and look around, and they hear a T-Rex coming in the distance. And so they get scared and they run. And seeing as the Tyrannosaurus Rex is coming full speed, they decide to go out into the water. And so they begin to trek out into the water, and because they're hadrosaurs, they can swim.
Sure.
They begin to swim out that way. And the T-Rex is roaring and yelling, and he ends up trekking out into the water. But the waves are so large that it pulls him further out into the water. And so this T-Rex ends up going so far out into the water that he's having difficulty maintaining swimming because of his small arms. So the hadrosaurs, seeing this, look to their right and they see this massive wave that's conical. There's like a form to it, and they know that's a megalodon. Ultimately, this megalodon bites this T-Rex clear in half, And it is so incredible to read and to just, it was great. And like the hadrosaurs are like looking on from the shore, like with their noses in the air. And it's so wonderful. Like this whole scene is painted so beautifully in that book. And I would have given anything to have seen that. Like at the beginning of this movie.
Your description of that scene was better than this entire movie, in my humble opinion.
It's such a great scene in the book, and I was thinking, I'm like, okay, there's a lot in this book that I don't want to see, but I would love to see that opening scene, because it explains a lot, actually, in the opening
scene. Maybe you'll get a sequel.
True. It does explain a lot in the film, like how it talks about how, kind of giving context for the Megalodon. It says that the Megalodon was a wonder during its time period because of the fact that the Megalodon was so fierce and just crazed in terms of being just nuts that it would actually eat its own young for food. So it would give birth, or it would see other Megalodons and it would actually eat them for territorial purposes and just maintaining dominance, being the alpha in the local area. So they were saying...
quite a few animals do sometimes do that.
True, but...
Even in the modern... Like, in the world today, some animals do... Maybe not their own young, but they do eat competitors' young.
Yeah.
Of the same species.
Yeah, and well, this one said specifically that it was a wonder how this lineage of sharks ever lasted as long as it did because of how often, apparently, they constantly ate their young. So... And it, I don't know. It's just what
Which
the book
sounds
says.
Like something you'd make up for a book, but
true.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe they found one,
right?
Fossil that did that. I don't know. I don't know.
But that was one of the small hopes that I did have in terms of like seeing going to the big screen. But I think all in all, the film doesn't necessarily disappoint in terms of like what I was expecting with story. Like it actually has a decent enough story that's from beginning to end. It does resolve, and it does have, you know, the enclosed storyline. I'm not too worried about future films anytime soon, although they'll probably milk this for all the money they can, and they will make more. I don't know. I actually like the way the story went. I like the way the story moved. I don't know. What did you think, Spence, about the story? You being the B-movie aficionado.
Well, you know, I like to gather my thoughts.
I can see that.
Now, wait a minute, though. Is this supposed to be a B-movie?
That's a great question.
Hmm.
It has a lot of the markers of a B-movie, but I don't know if this really is trying to be one.
Well, see, that's the thing. What would we... Spencer, being the B-movie aficionado...
this is still going to be your charge.
How do you define... What exactly is a B movie as opposed to a regular movie? What exemplifies a B movie?
B movie? Well,
B movie.
I suppose generally the B movies that I'm familiar with are not, unless they, with the one exception that I can think of like Superman 4, because that one was a train wreck.
Mm.
With that exception, like most of them aren't like, you know, big budget, like knock it out of the park type movies.
What about the XXX franchise?
I have not seen that.
I don't think those are meant to be B movies. They just turned out that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
In my opinion, I think that they wanted those to be an action franchise.
So would you say then that there are natural B, like there are intentional B movies and unintentional B movies?
Yes, most definitely.
Okay. So then I think we could clearly classify this one, if I may do so, Senor B-movie aficionado, classify this one as an unintentional B-movie. Or do you disagree? Do you think that they meant it to be a ridiculous B-movie?
Oh, no. I think they're trying to make a, like, you know, an actual play for, like, you know, a good movie. I just don't know if this fits, for me, into the unintentional B-movie slot, because... Again, I'd just be expecting this movie to be a bit worse than it actually is.
Hmm.
And for me, like, this movie, like, falls into, like, the sad range of being just kind of forgettable.
Like, wow.
Because, honestly, like, when I was waking up this morning, I was like, what movie did I see yesterday?
When you were waking up this morning, wow.
Yeah.
No, right. I had the same problem. I've been worrying all day about this episode because it didn't register enough for me to care,
like
to remember.
It didn't leave enough impression of like, it's not terrible. It's not super good. It's just kind of meh.
It's just there.
Yeah, it's just there like air, and then 1 second it's not there at all.
Wow.
Like someone flicked off the projector.
Well, and I think some of that also goes to tone. One of the things, and granted this may have been unfair of me, one of the things I was hoping for was something sinister, like something almost with like the abyss or sphere, like something that has a tone, like a scary movie thriller tone, like even if it's not a giant shark, you don't know what's around the corner and you don't know if you're going to survive. This film kind of just went through the paces to me. Like it was just like, and this is the part where we see a shark again. And this is the part where somebody cracks a joke. And this is the part where there's a little girl out of, you know, out of context. And just there wasn't anything that really felt at all original to me in the way that they told the story. I think I agree with you, Spencer. I think it's very forgettable, and that's unfortunate because usually, usually Jason Statham is more memorable because you have him doing kung fu or whatever.
Mm.
In this film, he doesn't get to do that because he's a diver, so he's swimming slowly and maybe shooting toward the thing or maybe pulling somebody out of the water. But like, it's not the Jason Statham that you're used to seeing. It's a far downplayed version of him. And a lot of the scenes I think were meant to be like almost homage to Jaws, but really kind of felt like, okay, but Jaws did it better because nobody had seen this before when Jaws came out. Now with this one, it's just like a bigger version of the one in Jaws, the scene in Jaws. Okay, do something different with it so that it feels special. And I think that there were a number of opportunities that they missed because the creature is larger than Jaws, and yet they really didn't, they just, I don't know, it didn't do anything special in my opinion that makes it stand out as something worth remembering.
Right.
Hmm.
Let's say even with like a few pieces of the movie that I actually thought were kind of nice sequences, like there's a part where Jason Statham's in the water and then they're trying to get him back on the boat. And so they're like reeling him back in while the boat's taking off and like the shark is like chomping after him. I was like, that's pretty cool. But yeah, there's lots of cool like little scenes like that. But cohesively together, it just doesn't form something that's memorable.
Well, see, and to me, in my mind, that kind of defines a bad movie. Because if you take the makeup of something like Sharknado.
Mm-hmm.
So we saw Sharknado again, sadly, a couple of Fridays ago.
Hey, it's not sad for everyone.
So see, and
some people enjoy it.
This is the thing. Some people enjoy the parts of it. Like they like to see Tara Reid being Tara Reid. Or they like to see Zach Earing, or whatever his name is. Ian Ziering. Earing something.
Zach Earing.
I don't know.
Zach Earing.
The guy who plays Finn, oddly enough. See him like tear through a shark with a chainsaw. Or seeing ridiculous things like Tony Hawk writing down the actual Sydney Opera House on a skateboard to fix something. Those are all fun parts of a film. Now, in its entirety, it's horrible. It's a bad movie.
There's a difference, though.
How
like,
so?
I didn't say that it was, like, good or bad, but I can remember what Sharknado is about.
That's absolutely because it's so ridiculous. It's to the, okay.
It leaves an impression, though. And that's the difference.
He tells the Pope, "Forgive me, Father, for I am Finn."
That was so stupid.
But that's what it's supposed to do. Like they do that intentionally in those movies.
Oh, that's an intentional line.
Here's the thing.
Versus like other creature features, my favorite being the Jurassic Park, Jurassic World series, with the exception of Jurassic Park 3, which was garbage.
Alan,
But like, that could easily, and has been, dinosaurs have been done campy before. They've been, I mean, claymation and all that mess. They've been done well, and they've been done poorly. What the series does well, number one, is they come from a phenomenal book by Michael Crichton, which this series is not a Michael Crichton series. The impression that I get from it is it's not quite to the level of, you know, a Jurassic Park or Sphere or Westworld or Congo or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The source material is not that good, that like that well-researched, find a way to make it plausible, believable, and write it super well. It's more of a fun romp kind of a series is what it sounds like, with a little bit of research, because it is an actual creature that used to exist. But then you get to the movie, and the movie then is also borrowing from other movies that did things really, really well in their day and age. And because you've kind of got this everything in a blender sort of an approach, there's nothing that's there's no unique flavor to this movie that kind of, to me, stands out above any of the rest of them. That's like, oh, okay, but it took it to the next level when they did this. They being the characters or the creators, you know, the way that they let it play out.
Was there any other thing that you felt was highlighted in the film, or anything that really stood out to you before we round out this conversation?
All right, I know you guys are probably going to disagree with this, but
I don't know. It's you, Spence. I disagree with you a lot. So,
I had a major problem with the little girl in this movie.
Oh, that's right. You said this right after the film.
I found her very creepy, and I don't know why, because she has some really great lines.
Spencer, it's okay. We know you don't like kids. That's already been stated. Bad. You just, I've yet to see you
I'm
in the
so
same.
I'm so glad you took that in that direction. I thought that you were about to get us in massive trouble.
What?
Yeah, we'll talk about it later.
I don't think I've ever seen Spencer in the same room with anybody under the age of 13. So I think you I think you have an issue with little children. No. This little girl was probably the highlight of the entire film. I enjoyed her more than Jason Statham, which he did minimal. But I enjoyed him. I enjoyed her more than the shark.
Okay, you're both crazy. She was not creepy, and she was not good. She was not enjoyable. She was kind of just an extra character thrown in there because it matters when you have a child in danger. She was just sort of there for me. Like, yeah, she had some funny lines, but anybody could have done that. She really doesn't talk all that much. But, yeah, I think that she was just kind of, she was a plot device, and that bothers me when there's a character and there's a plot device. And there are quite a few of them in this movie, by the way. And part of that is because I think it really is a B movie trying to be legitimate. And that means that it's neither. It's not a B. It doesn't work as a B movie. And it also, to me, didn't work as a legitimate movie. It's just kind of in some limbo land. It's like in that permafrost layer or whatever the heck they called it. It sort of like stays there and doesn't ever really fully define itself. Yeah. One way or the other. It's just a bunch of parts moving in a similar direction.
I really agree with that.
You would. You and your creepy child phobia.
I'm sorry. Phobia. No. Like, if it turned out that this girl was, like, psychically controlling the Meg, I've been like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Right? Spencer would have been like, I told you the whole time.
She was
psychically controlling the sharks.
She was just setting off red flags in my mind. I was like, I don't like this girl.
That's because you don't like kids, Spencer.
Okay.
You're allergic to them or something. I don't know. You sneeze at the nearest sign of anything nowadays. All right, well, let's go.
You know what was better than the girl was the little dog.
Yes!
I like the little dog far better than any of the human characters or the sharks. The dog was the best part of this movie to me.
The dog... Okay.
I'm being a little hyperbolic, but still. Like, the dog was enjoyable.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Well, the dog. Well, that about wraps up this conversation, so why don't we go around the table and see if this film passes or fails and how many monocles, starting with Chad Williams.
Oh.
Ah. What? That's not even his last name.
Which one of us is that?
Chad, go ahead.
Okay.
Just trying to get you both to stop.
Now,
to
Johnny on the spot, so here's where I have to decide. So this movie can't decide what it is, so I have to decide, does it pass or fail? I think for its lack of identity to me, that I think that's a big, big problem in my personal opinion. So I have a sense that for me, in my heart, I'm going to fail this movie.
No.
Because I would rather forget it than remember it. And not because it offended me. It's because it really didn't do anything. It kind of just sat there and wasted my time for an hour and 45 minutes. So it had an opportunity that it did not rise to the occasion of. Yeah, I think that I've talked myself into it. It might be unpopular, and I might disagree with every other critic who reviews this movie on the face of the planet, but it's going to fail in my book. I'll give it 2 monocles.
Spencer?
Mostly for the dog.
I figured as much.
Ha.
Yeah, I am in agreement with Chad on a lot of this. It just, I'm going to wake up on Thursday and have no recollection of any movie that I watched.
That seems to be every movie you say. Every time we see a movie, I'm not going to remember this tomorrow. I think you may need some ginkgo biloba. Like, I think you have issues with memory or something.
What the heck is that?
Some ginseng in your diet.
It's a substance that helps your memory get better over time.
I think you
need some ginkgo biloba. Yes.
Okay, so yeah, this movie's going to fail for me, and I will give it 2 monocles because it had some pretty good lines in it, but, you know, nothing memorable.
Mm. How many monocles?
2.
Okay.
Okay, Yoda.
Raggy?
Raggy? Raggy? See, I told you the dog is the best part.
I'm going to pass this movie. I don't care what either of you say. I actually...
When have you ever?
It's true. I actually enjoyed the movie. I enjoyed the idea of the movie. And even though it wasn't my favorite interpretation of the book, I feel like this is kind of the stepping stone for them to do it right in the second one. Much like most films nowadays. I mean, not everybody hits it out of the park the first time around. So sometimes when they get that sequel, it does better. And I'm really holding out for that scene from the book. So okay. I'm hoping that the sequel does that.
What do you mean by I enjoyed the idea of the movie? Because that kind of seems like...
No, this is what that means. I think that Eddie just confirmed this movie is the Transformers 2 of shark movies.
Maybe. Just maybe.
Yeah, that's what that means. It means like, maybe I want to give a different one a shot.
Exactly. See, that's what I'm saying. The first one didn't really knock it out of the park, but I'm hoping the second one will bring it home.
Okay.
In terms of monocles, I will give it 3 out of 5. Like I said, I did like the up-close looks of the shark. I did like some of the action sequences, plus some of the stuff that in it was just really fun. And I liked a lot of the little callbacks to Jaws and other shark films, so I thought that was pretty unique. But let us know what you think. Drop us a line on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers, or drop us a line on our Twitter page at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. And check out the film if you get a chance this weekend. But if not, you have options, because not only is The Meg debuting this week, but you also got Slender Man and Black KK Klansman. That's really difficult
to
say.
That's the new Spike Lee one.
Yes. So, if you don't get a chance to see The Meg, check out one of these other films, support your local cinema, and let us know what you watch. Love to hear about what you guys are seeing out there. Yeah, that about wraps up another awesome episode. Before we go, we will let you know that we do have a special... extra credit episode where we're going to talk a little bit more about Spencer's fixation on B movies and why it seems to be a point of his mindset and fixation. So we'll dive a little bit more into that in the extra credit episode. But like we said, thanks for sticking around. So from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Chad.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.